All right, so is any... Oh, I'm taking the river with me. There we go. Let's get rid of the river there. All right, I see a lot of people fanning. It is warm in here, and I understand that, and you're not here to listen to me because you've already seen your kids, and I understand that, but I would ask for just a few minutes because I just want to share with you a little bit of what we've had the opportunity to share with your children all week. My name is Brent, and I'm the lead pastor here at Ashworth Road, and we really do consider it an honor to have the opportunity to work with your kids over this last week. We love your kids. We've had so much fun. This place has been rocking, and we've been dancing, and we've been screaming and shouting, and it's been absolutely amazing. In fact, all week, if you look here on the screen, I've got some pictures to show you because we've been playing games and eating snacks and performing science experiments and singing songs and listening to Bible stories, all centering around this idea of this great adventure of life with God and how following Jesus is this really amazing adventure. You know, one of the things I love about kids is their inquisitive nature. They love to ask questions, at least my kids do, and sometimes I welcome those questions, and sometimes it just drives me absolutely bananas. Anybody else in that boat, parents, where it's just like, you know, before you have children, you think to yourself things like this: well, I would never do certain things as a parent, right? You think that because before you have children, you are the perfect parent, and we all understand that. And then you have children, and then you find yourself slipping into the patterns of your own parents, like your kids will ask you a question, or you say, you need to do this, and they say, why? And you do something you told yourself you'd never do. You look at them and you say, because I said so. And you're convinced, oh, what have I done? I mean, I've told you guys before, many times I look in the mirror and I see my father staring back at me. I'll say something to my children and it's like, oh my goodness, I have become my father. But kids ask all kinds of questions like, you know, why is the sky blue and how does a car run and where do babies come from? And all those fun questions that parents love the opportunity to answer, and we just sometimes have to bear through it. And as a parent, it can be challenging and it can be difficult to keep our sanity in the midst of those questions. But you know, Jesus also experienced that as well. Only most of the time, the questions he was getting was not from children. Most of the time, the questions he was getting were from people who wanted to challenge him. He came in and he began to teach with authority. He began to say something different, things that really went against the status quo. And those that really liked the way things were, those that were really set in this system, didn't care for what Jesus was doing. So they often tried to ask him questions and they tried to trip him up, to get him to say things that would make him look bad or damage his reputation, or hopefully even at the end, they were trying to find something that they could arrest him for and that they could get him out of the way and discredit him as a teacher. And this summer, every Sunday, what we're doing is we're preaching through the Gospels of the New Testament, mostly Matthew, and we're looking at Jesus' words, the things that he actually spoke. We're calling it the red letters, and if you're not familiar with the Bible, you may be like, well, what does that have to do? Well, some Bibles are actually printed, and when you go to the New Testament and you see a different ink for certain words, the red letters are the words that Jesus actually spoke. And so what we're doing this summer is we're taking a look at what did Jesus actually teach? What did he actually say? And we want to figure out, are we lining up? Are we understanding? Do we really believe the things that Jesus actually taught? And today I just want to look very briefly at a time where Jesus was asked a question. And masterfully, like Jesus did, he didn't answer the question, but he answered an even more important question. And it led me, as I read through this story, to begin to wonder that when it comes to religion and when it comes to our search for being right with God, sometimes we're so bent on finding the answer that we don't even stop to consider, are we even asking the right question to get where we need to be? In Matthew's gospel, we find this story where Jesus has been surrounded by Pharisees, which were these religious leaders. These were people that were very strict in following the rule of the law, and they really didn't like what Jesus had to say, and they're coming at him with question after question, and Jesus is amazing. He was able to just kind of shut them down with his answers, not in a rude way, not in a hostile way, but just in a way that left them kind of scratching their heads. And there's this one time where he's asked this question, and his answer is amazing. In Matthew chapter 22, verse 34, it'll be on the screen. Look at what this story that unfolds here. says, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, which is another religious group, the Pharisees got together, and one of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two." Did you catch what happened here? Jesus masterfully did not answer the question he was asked. He did not give them the answer they were looking for. In fact, he gave them an even better answer, one that was even better than the question they were asking. Years ago, there was a show on television called The West Wing. Anybody watch The West Wing? One of my favorite shows on television. It kind of looked behind the scenes at politics and the White House and all this. It was amazing. And one episode I remember was there was a guy who was running as a candidate for the vice president of the United States. And somebody asked him, he said, "So how do you answer difficult questions? How do you deal with questions?" And he responded this way. He said, "If you don't like what they're asking, you don't accept the premise of the question." You don't accept the premise of the question. So that basically says if somebody comes to you and asks you a question and you don't want to answer it because you know it'll alienate somebody, you just ignore that question. I mean, we all have seen politicians do this, right? They get asked a question and man, they can subvert and answer something that nobody asked. Well, that's essentially what Jesus did here, only Jesus is not a politician. Jesus is pointing them to an even better question that they should have been asking. The Pharisees were extremely religious people. They tried to follow the letter of the law. And when we think of the law, we're talking about the Old Testament. And many times we'll think only 10 commandments, but that's not what we're talking about because the Pharisees had taken the 10 commandments and expanded it to be 613 laws that needed to be followed. That's a lot. I mean, I could barely keep track of the top 10, right? The 10 commandments. But 613 is how they decided to live their lives. And this guy comes to Jesus and he says, which one of these laws, which one of these 613 is most important? And the reason this question was a problem is because no matter how Jesus answered it, there was going to be a wrong answer. Because if he said this law, take one of the laws, and he said this is the one that's most important. Let's say do not murder. Then they're going to say, oh, but what about the Sabbath and keeping it holy? Well, he said, oh, well, it's don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Well, so it's okay to kill people? You see, it's a non-winnable question that he was asked. And so instead of damaging himself and answering the question he's asked, he diverts them and gives them the better answer to a question they should have been asking. Jesus saw through the words of the question to see what was behind it. Because the man that was asking the question, he really didn't want to know which law was the best. What the man was really wanting to know is, how can I be okay with God? How can I earn God's approval? How can I do enough in my life so that God looks at me and says, okay, you're fine? And that's a completely different question. And this question that the man is asking and the way Jesus answered it is what separates Christ followers from everyone else. Because Jesus doesn't look at the guy and say, hey, you want to be right with God? Then what you need to do is you do 10 good deeds a month. You know, help an old lady across the street a couple of times. Help somebody get their groceries in the car. And hey, and by the way, don't kill anybody and you'll be good. Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus also doesn't say, well, go to church 3 out of 4 Sundays and give 10% of your money and then you'll be okay with God. Jesus doesn't say that either. Jesus tells the man and everyone standing around that as long as you are asking this type of question, you will miss it. You will miss why he came. You will miss what he was here to do. Because what Jesus is telling us is that you can't do it. It's not about what you can accomplish. It's not about what your good deeds. It's not about your performance. It's all about your heart. And it's all about a relationship, and that is a relationship with Jesus. You see, one of the easiest things I think we can do is modify our behavior. Now, I know I even say that, and some of you are like, what are you talking about? No, think about it for a second. One of the easiest things we can do is modify our behavior. We can will ourselves into a new diet if we want to. We can will ourselves there. We can will ourselves into being nice to people that we really don't want to be nice to and don't care for. I willed myself for a year and 3 months to go running at least 3 times a week. And let me tell you what, it was the easiest thing to do. I was rigid about it. Before I went to bed every night, I packed my bag because I was going to shower at the Y. And when I left the Y, I was coming to church. And so I packed my clothes to change into and deodorant and my hair gel and all that good stuff. I did that for a year and 3 months. But do you know, I willed myself to change my behavior, but not one day did it ever change my heart. You know how I know? Because up until the last day that I ran, you know how I ran? Just like this. Oh, dear God, I hate this so bad. Oh, I hate this. A year and 3 months in, I am still on a treadmill thinking, I absolutely hate this. Can I get a witness? I mean, seriously, it was horrible. And let me tell you, it wasn't like I limited myself to one thing. I ran inside on a treadmill. I ran outside on the beautiful trails outside here out around West Des Moines. I ran on hot days. I ran on cold days. I ran on days that were just right. And it didn't matter. I ran short distances. I ran long distances. And every time I thought to myself, you are a grown man. You don't have to do this if you don't want to. But I willed myself to run. But I could never will myself to love running. And that told me that I can do all the right things. I can do everything right. And I can have all the right answers. But only God can change the heart. And unless there is a heart change, we are just going through the motions. Because our heart tells our real story. It reveals our real motivation. If I'm only doing good things to better my career, if I'm only doing good things so others notice me, my heart knows that it's a selfish motivation. You see, Jesus was a master at putting his finger on people's lives to point out those things that we cared about the most. And he was able to show us these things that maybe what we're after is not really worth being after in relation to a in relationship with him. It's interesting that Jesus answers this guy's question not with one of the 613 laws that they were trying to follow, but with something every Jewish person would have learned since birth. It's Deuteronomy. It's called the Shema. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. These people knew this, and Jesus brings them back to this. Now, why was this so significant, and why was this so important? Why would Jesus say the ultimate commandment, the ultimate thing that we're called to do is love? Why would Jesus say that? Because you can't love from a distance, and Jesus wants a close relationship with us. Why love? Because you cannot love without action. Why love? Because you cannot love without involving every part of your being, your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Why love? Because you can't love without a relationship. So as I conclude, I just want you to think about this morning. What's the question that you're asking? Is it how to be successful? Let me tell you, Jesus doesn't give us an answer on 6 steps to wealth. It's not in the Bible. But rather, he wants to make sure that what you're living your life for is worth really living for, because it does no good for someone to gain the whole world and lose their soul in the process. Is your question this morning, God, how can I be happy? Jesus is saying, whose definition of happiness are you using? Because the happiness and satisfaction and fulfillment in life comes not in achieving and acquiring, but in giving and serving. Is your question this morning, how can I have peace with God and know that I have eternal life? Then Jesus says to you today, stop trying to earn it. You can't. And what's even better is Jesus says you don't have to earn it. You can't. He's done everything possible to make us right with God. And everything that Jesus has done by his death and his sinless life, his death in the cross, and his resurrection from the dead. When Jesus died, he took on himself the sin of the world. He bore the punishment that we deserved. He defeated the powers of evil and that enslaved us. And in his resurrection, he defeated death and the grave. And he offers you and me new life in him. Because of what Jesus has done, there's nothing left for us to do. Jesus is telling the Pharisees then, and he's telling us today, that what we need to do, this is it, love. He's not talking about taking on a religious system. He says, follow me. Be my disciple, a Christ follower. What's your question that you're asking this morning? Are you asking the right question? In your search for life and peace, satisfaction and fulfillment? Are you so focused on the answer that you haven't even considered if you are asking the right question?